The Iranian connection to Russian attacks on Ukraine, as Kyiv again appeals to allies to supply air defenses.
Iran has supplied thousands of drones to Russia throughout its invasion of Ukraine.
Plus, a look at how the results of the U.S. presidential election in November could impact Ukraine's future.
During his presidency, Donald Trump maintained a close relationship with Russian President Vladimir Putin. 5 years later, he called him a genius for invading Ukraine. In his State of the Union last month, President Biden said Ukraine needs U.S. support to stand up to Russia's invasion.
And later in the program, a private high school in California is providing scholarships to refugee students from Ukraine and Afghanistan. Today is Monday, April 15th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Lori London. Ukraine on Monday hailed the efficiency of Allied support to Israel in repelling Iran's air attack over the weekend and urged countries to follow that example when it comes to Ukraine. Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba.
We urgently require additional Patriot and other modern air defense systems, weapons, and ammunition. I take this opportunity to once again urge all of our partners to take extraordinary and bold steps. This war cannot and must not be normalized. Ukrainian air defense is now protecting not only Ukrainian skies from Russian air terror. It also shields neighboring Moldova, Romania, and Poland from the immediate threat of missile and drone entering their airspace.
In a similar message, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky used his address Sunday to condemn Iran's drone and missile attack on Israel and said his country, like Israel, also needs help from allies to fend off threats from the air. Christy Kilburn with Reuters has more.
In a nightly address, Zelensky said that, quote, Israel was not alone in this defense, adding that, quote, when Ukraine says that the Allies cannot turn a blind eye to Russian missiles and drones, it means that it is necessary to act and act strongly. The war in Ukraine has escalated in recent weeks. Ukraine's top commander said on Sunday that Russian forces aim to capture the town of Chavis Yar by May 9th. Setting the stage for an important battle for control of high ground in the east, where Russia is focusing its assaults. Since late March, Russia has launched multiple major attacks on Ukrainian energy infrastructure, inflicting significant damage to the Ukrainian power system and causing emergency power cuts in some regions. This senior employee at a plant that is undisclosed for security reasons says he had to go to the bomb shelter after seeing that no power units were left intact. Zelensky again called on the U.S. Congress to approve a vital aid package that has been blocked by House Republicans for months. Republican Representative Steve Scalise said that in response to the Iranian attack, the House would change its schedule to consider legislation that supports Israel and holds Iran accountable. It was not immediately clear to which legislation he was referring. Iran has supplied thousands of drones to Russia throughout its invasion of Ukraine. They've been used to exhaust Ukrainian air defenses and hit infrastructure far from the front lines.
That was Christy Kilburn with Reuters reporting. Now we're joined by Anna Chernikova in Kyiv for reaction on the ground. Anna, what can you tell us?
Well, Ukrainian society in general in this situation is more supportive to Israel. And of course, this latest attack for Ukrainians was very much understandable because Ukrainians are living through similar attacks every day for the past more than 2 years. And Ukrainians, of course, realize what does it mean to this such a combined attack using drone and different types of missiles. President Zelensky, in his comments, mentioned that the air defense that was used, not only the Israeli air defense, but also the air defense of the Allies, is a very good example of what Ukraine would also love to have. Because in Ukraine, there are a lot of talks about the fact that Russian missiles are entering the territory of other states, the bordering states, which are states of NATO, and no one is actually in action except of Ukrainian air defense. So basically, President Zelensky mostly was talking about about the fact that Iranian forces used similar tactics that Russian forces are using in Ukraine, and also about the fact that allies were actually helping Israel. And from his speech was, you know, seen that Ukraine would also want to negotiate the possibility that allies in the future will also help Ukraine.
And I know things are getting really tough on the front lines, and there are obviously have been a lot of concerns over the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant that was hit about a week ago. Sounds like there are some updates from the International Atomic Energy Agency director.
Yeah, so following this tough week when we've heard that the Atomic Energy Agency confirmed that the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant was under attack and that there were explosions heard, and a representative of the Atomic Energy Agency on the ground confirmed that actually the attack was happening, reportedly with the use of drone. And at this point, we do not have confirmation of whose drones was that, because Ukraine accuses Russia and Russia accuses Ukraine. But the latest is Rafael Grossi. He confirmed that all six reactor units of the Ukrainian Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant was shut down to cold. So basically, what does it mean? That all reactors are now operating just to make sure that the station is active, but we do not have this real, you know, operation of the plant of such capacity. And basically what Rafael Grossi is saying, that this definitely increases the safety of the plant in the circumstances that we have right now. Basically, in case of any possible incident, the effect will be less dangerous and less risky than it could be when at least one reactor is working in full. So cold shutdown is that was International Atomic Energy Agency supporting, and it was made in order to increase the safety. But in general, Rafael Grossi highlighted that the safety situation is very bad at the plant and that the risk remains very high. The Russian forces are remaining at the plant. And from what Rafael Grossi reported recently, situation seems quite dangerous still.
Anna Chernikova reporting for VOA from Kyiv. Thank you so much for the update.
Thank you, Laurie.
House Speaker Mike Johnson said Sunday he will try to advance a national security aid package this week for Israel that also includes funding for Ukraine. A top U.S. general in Europe told Congress last week, without U.S. support in fairly short order, Ukraine will be vulnerable to a partial or total defeat. I asked James Townsend, senior fellow with the Center for a New American Security, who previously served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for European and NATO policy, how long Ukraine can hold on without U.S. military support.
They can hold up for a while. They've got, they're using drones instead of artillery. They're using cluster munitions. They're working around to the problem. But the thing is, as each day goes by, it becomes harder and harder to do that. And so not only are the amount of shells that they're using in terms of 155 millimeter shells, and also the Soviet caliber of shell, not only are those getting harder and harder for them to acquire, and so the pool of shells that are available getting weaker and weaker, but they're having to use other kinds of ammunition that doesn't do the job as well as the 155 millimeter. And so I know that's a bit in the weeds, but it just shows that Ukraine is trying all kinds of strategies to buy time until the Americans can get their act together politically and start back up in terms of providing the kinds of ammunition that they really need. Another kind of ammunition they need is the air defense missiles. You know, the Russians right now are really wreaking havoc. They've destroyed a major electrical facility that Ukraine has. It was destroyed. It was using thermal energy to produce electricity, and it was destroyed completely. And so they need Patriot missiles. They need other kinds of missiles that are used to shoot down drones or ballistic missiles or aircraft, whatever it might be. And that's something that they really need. So they can hold out, but it gets harder and harder and harder and harder as the days go by.
When you say hold out, you mean just barely hanging on, though. Can they actually win this war at the rate it's going?
No, they certainly cannot. If the U.S. does not provide any assistance at all, Europe, as hard as they're trying right now, they can't fill the gap. And so I think what General Cavoli said is absolutely right. You lose if the opposition is shooting more shells at you than you're shooting at them. And so that's kind of where things are now. And again, it gets worse by by the day. So they're not going to lose today, but in 6 months, in a year, they might be too weak by that time to hold back a Russian offensive.
And then what happens?
Well, then Russia breaks through the Ukraine defenses, and they begin to take a lot of Ukraine that they weren't able to do earlier. And the West finds itself in a pickle, because the West has to say, well, what are we going to do? Just let Ukraine be taken by the Russians? We're going to sit back and watch the Russians take advantage of our polarized politics in the United States and Europe's inability to meet the needs themselves. So what will the West do? Ukraine is not in NATO, but at the same time, Ukraine's fight is NATO's fight. And so NATO will be the only thing left between a revitalized, larger, and more battle-hardened Russian army and the rest of Europe. And so this is an acute period now where we've got to turn things around.
And we don't hear a lot about it, of the suffering. There's a pretty intense humanitarian crisis going on now across the country as well.
There is. And it's the only way to halt that humanitarian catastrophe is to provide air defense so that you don't have this rain of death coming down on the Ukraine people. And so it's just unconscionable to sit back and let the time go by while the Republicans in the House of Representatives are trying to figure out what they want to do.
There's a lot of concern there, too, that what happens in the election in November here in the U.S.
That's right. And that certainly worries the allies. You know that Putin would certainly be very happy if Trump came back. Trump would certainly reduce, if not eliminate, U.S. support for Ukraine, leaving Europe holding the bag and Ukraine being at the mercy of the Russians. So, yes, there's concern in a lot of European capitals, and there's a potential celebration in Moscow if, in fact, Trump comes back.
The Europeans are working very hard to step up their own support for Ukraine, but that isn't enough without the U.S. aid, correct?
That's right. They need a couple more years, frankly, to increase the production of artillery shells and that kind of thing. And so they can't do it in their current state of their defense industry. They're trying, and they're going around and trying to find stocks of ammunition that are in warehouses or whatever that might be available across Europe or globally. The Czechs are being very effective doing that. But in terms of new production, they're not going to be able to be at scale for a couple of years.
James Townsend, Senior Fellow with the Center for a New American Security. Since Russia's invasion of Ukraine over 2 years ago, the divisions between congressional Democrats and Republicans over sending military aid to Kyiv have deepened. VOA's senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Pursuti explains how the two presidential frontrunners differ on how to handle the Russian war in Ukraine.
For 2 years, an all-out war in Ukraine. This week, the U.S. approved the sale of $138 million of upgraded equipment for Ukraine's Hawk air defense systems that counter Russian missile strikes. In his State of the Union last month, President Biden said Ukraine needs U.S. support to stand up to Russia's invasion.
If anybody in this room thinks Putin will stop at Ukraine, I assure you he will not. Ukraine can stop Putin if we stand with Ukraine and provide the weapons that it needs to defend itself.
Since the invasion began, the Biden administration has imposed sanctions on Russian individuals and entities and sent $75 billion in assistance to Ukraine. As the son of a Ukrainian immigrant, Stephen Cassells says he will vote for Biden.
Watching the war there and watching Putin and watching the people that, for me, unfortunately, President Trump has aligned himself with, at least emotionally, is very scary.
It's an honor to be with you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
During his presidency, Donald Trump maintained a close relationship with Russian President Vladimir Putin. 5 years later, he called him a genius for invading Ukraine. The Washington Post reports that Trump has said he would end the war by pressuring Ukraine to cede land to Russia. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky calls that a primitive idea. At a recent rally, Trump recalled a conversation he had with a country leader, delinquent on NATO payments for Ukraine.
Well, sir, if we don't pay and we're attacked by Russia, will you protect us? I said, no, I would not protect you. In fact, I would encourage them to do whatever the hell they want. You got to pay.
Biden and Trump differ greatly over how to end the war in Ukraine.
President Trump has made a promise to the American people, and they can trust that he will deliver on it to end the war in Ukraine, to negotiate a peace deal with both sides.
And that's why Isaac Geer of New Hampshire will vote for Trump.
It's really important to me that we stay out of any foreign wars.
Carolyn Persutti, VOA News.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. In the Telangana state, India, a man is desperately trying to get his brother back, whom he says was deceived into an employment opportunity that turned into working for Russia's war effort in Ukraine. Henry Wilkins has the story.
Salman Zahour Syed says his younger brother was duped into working in the front lines for Russia during its full-scale invasion of Ukraine. He went to Russia after being promised a job as a labourer for the government, with pay of about $2,000 a month and possible Russian citizenship. When he arrived, he signed a contract. Then things started to turn sour. He says that when his brother and the other Indian men he went to Russia with realised what was happening, they were told they would have to fight when needed by the military, as they had already signed the documents. He says the contract was in Russian and there was no way his brother could have understood it. Although his brother is working in logistics and not in a combat role, he has been on the front line near Kherson and 2 months ago watched as more than 20 Indian, Nepali and Russian men were killed in a Ukrainian drone attack. According to analysts, hundreds of people from Global South countries like India, Nepal and Cuba have been duped into combat and non-combat roles for Russia and Ukraine. They also say that evidence shows Russia is ramping up this practice. Milosz Bartoszewicz is with the Center for Eastern Studies, a Polish think tank.
Sometimes these methods resemble human trafficking and so on, because Russians are aiming for people who want to leave their country. The Indians, they were looking for some opportunities to leave India, and they were basically lured, they were deceived.
One expert VOA spoke to explained that it's common for nations at war to recruit from abroad, but her historical analysis of the past two centuries shows deceiving recruits into working in conflict zones is incredibly rare. Elizabeth M.F. Grassmeda at Duke University.
And the reason they don't do that is it is so profoundly politically costly to your allies. You get horrible soldiers who have no desire to fight because they didn't want to come there to fight. So there's almost no meaningful return. So it's almost remarkable how rare this is and what that tells us about how much Putin believes what the Russian military can bring to bear in Ukraine and what it needs to be victorious, just how wide that gap is.
As for Syed, he says his brother doesn't even know if he's been paid. Adding that they haven't had the chance to check if they have received any payments to their bank account. He says the forest where his brother is a long way from civilization, and the agents who arranged his passage to Russia might have cheated him by giving incorrect bank details. Syed says the only way he can speak to his brother is when sympathetic Russian soldiers lend his brother their phones. Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Narayan Pet, India.
It has been 2 years since the once bustling town of Siversk in Ukraine's Donetsk region has enjoyed electricity, gas, and sewage service. Anna Kostuchenko visited the town and spoke with residents.
The town of Siversk is just 8 kilometers away from the front line. Before Russia invaded Ukraine in February 2022, more than 12,000 people lived in Siversk. Now about 800 people remain. Most are older adults unwilling to start a new life away from their homes, no matter how bad things get. Tatiana Gulaeva is one of them. How many people live on this street?
Just our family.
Since the spring of 2022, Siversk has had neither electricity nor running water.
My husband is usually the one to get water.
At night, they use a solar flashlight, a gift from volunteers. There is also no working sewage system in Siversk. After their apartment was destroyed by Russian missiles, the couple and their dog had to move to a summer house on the outskirts of Siversk. But Russian missiles are a danger here as well. Gulaeva recalls how just days prior a neighbor's house got hit.
We were at home. I immediately moved away from the window, and glass went flying through the entire room. When I looked out afterwards, there was a 5-meter pit in our neighbor's yard. It was scary, and our roof has been blown off. It's the third time we've repaired the roof.
Those who don't have a well rely on others to bring them water. These volunteers make the trip regularly, despite the constant shelling. Alexander, who didn't want to share his last name, has been living in the basement of his apartment building for over a year now.
My son was killed.
When there is no shelling, Alexander visits his own apartment to cook some food.
Here's a little gas stove where I cook. We pay volunteers, and they refuel stoves in Kramatorsk for us.
All the stores in Siversk are closed. Once a month, the local administration brings some food to the town. Volunteers come more often, making sure residents have groceries. Alla, a resident who doesn't want to share her last name, just got 2 packs of cookies. She says she'd prefer some high blood pressure medication, but she takes what she can get. Residents can get medical help only when volunteers come to Siversk, she says.
The hospital is far, a 30-minute walk from here. It's generally closed, but opens for a while when volunteer doctors come over.
Despite the dangers and the difficulties, most everyone here says they have no intention of leaving their homes. And the Ukrainian government says it won't force them to leave. Anna Kostyuchenko for VOA News, Donetsk region, Ukraine.
A private high school in California has provided scholarships to 3 refugee students from Ukraine and Afghanistan. VOA's Jenya Dulo has the story of an American educator who has opened her home to 2 of them as they complete their studies.
High school student Yeva Cherkasova-Shakira was studying in Kyiv when Russia invaded Ukraine in 2022.
I would never think that I would really experience war, all these bombs, which I really witnessed.
When the women in her family fled to Poland, she reached out to High Bluff Academy here in San Diego, California, and got a full scholarship.
After all these inhumane things, coming here and seeing that people here want to embrace me with their hearts and all the kindness they give me, I think this is a big thing to always remember.
School founder Jill Duto sent the teen airline tickets and is paying for her education here.
I've always wanted to help. You know, there's so many people in need. It's where do you start? And I've always donated money to charity, but you don't get the same sense of satisfaction just writing a check, you know, to an organization. You never see where it goes. You never interact with the people that you're helping. And so this has been a really rewarding experience for me.
About 1/3 of the students here are international. Mohammed and Akila Mohammadi are siblings who escaped to Pakistan with their family following the 2021 Taliban takeover of Afghanistan. Duto helped them with students' visas and brought them to Southern California.
For me, Jill is just, I feel like, more than a mother. She did really amazing thing for us. Without her, we were lost. If she wasn't here with us, we wouldn't be here, sitting here right now.
When Duto couldn't find host families for the brother and sister, she took them into her home herself. She also helped guide studies that will have all 3 of the students graduating from high school this year. For college, Akila Mohammadi wants to major in biology. Cherkasova Shakira plans to study marketing. Mohammad Mohammadi says he wants to be an electrical engineer.
I do want to major in computer science and engineering. So I really want to fill the gaps in my education from back Afghanistan to here, especially in mathematics and improve my English.
Duto is also collaborating with a learning center in Afghanistan to help Afghan girls complete their studies online and receive high school diplomas from High Bluff Academy so they can apply to universities abroad. Jenya Dulo, VOA News, San Diego, California.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, just follow VOA News. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.